Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. I welcome my colleague and friend Joseph Sternberg, member of the editorial board of the Wall Street Journal. He writes political economics. He's based in London. And his most recent column turns on the melodrama of the BLS, the Bureau of Labor Statistics. And we have an announcement from the President of the United States days after the original drama started with the firing of a BLS chief who was nominated by the predecessor, Mr. Biden. This from the President. I am pleased to announce that I am nominating highly respected capital H, capital R, economist, capital E, Dr. E.J. Antony, as the next commissioner of the Bureau of Labor Statistics. Our economy is booming, writes the president, and E.J. will ensure that the numbers released are, all caps, honest and, all caps, accurate. I know E.J. Antony will be doing an incredible job in this new role. Congratulations, E.J. And there's a colorful photograph of the president and Mr. Antony standing next to him in what looks to be a three-piece suit with a gold tie, surrounded by the photographs of the president's family and lots of gold flags. Joseph, a very good evening to you. Antony is a add-on to the original story, which was the firing of the BLS chief nominated by Mr. Biden. Because, and that's the part I get lost, what was the official explanation for why somebody who'd been in the job not very long, I believe the confirmation took place just at the beginning of summer, what was the explanation for why she had to go? Good evening to you.
Hey, John. Well, I'm not sure that there's ever been a fully formed explanation for what's been going on with Trump and the Bureau of Labor Statistics recently. So, I mean, the chain of events here is that last week they issued a regular monthly report on job creation in the U.S. economy. And the most recent monthly numbers that they released were not great. And then they also issued one, you know, what people don't realize is that we have the headlines every month about the most recent data that have come out. But at the same time, you know, the BLS and other government statistical agencies are regularly revising data that they have already released. So oftentimes the thing that you hear about the first time, whatever that number is for whatever statistic you're talking about, it's not going to end up being the final number. And in this instance, the BLS had issued revisions for a couple of prior months, which is not unusual, but those revisions suggested that job creation had been much lower than BLS originally thought it was. And President Trump thought he smelled a rat here, because I think that there have been complaints in some corners of the MAGA world for a while that a bunch of these statistics are manipulated, or that there's some sort of funny business that goes on because it's all part of the deep state and these left-wing bureaucrats and academic statisticians who work in these departments are trying to publish numbers that will benefit Democrats politically and hurt Republicans, and particularly hurt President Trump. And so, one of the complaints here is that the BLS published good jobs data toward the tail end of the Biden administration that ultimately got revised downwards, but this was supposed to have been intended to help Kamala Harris when she was running for president. And I need to point out very clearly that there is no evidence that this is actually true. We can talk a lot about a bunch of problems that these agencies do have collecting good data about the U.S. economy these days, but there's no reason at all to think that it's a political plot. And in fact, the errors tend to run in both directions. So sometimes the revisions that they come out with are beneficial to Democrats politically for whatever reason. Other times you can argue that the revision helps Republicans. And so that's a good sign that when these data get revised or when they get published the first time, the agency is not trying to help one party or the other, because if the agency were doing that, they'd be doing a really terrible job of it.
Yes, and besides, collateral damage always comes from a number that surprises, no matter what direction it goes in. But the puzzle I have, Joe, is this is not something that the head can control, right? The whatever the BLS says about jobs or about the economy is on the basis of surveys that are done by maybe thousands, but certainly hundreds of people over a period of time. So the allegation was that number was false based on bad data. I never understood the reason for this.
Well, with President Trump, you shouldn't assume that there has been a lot of deep thinking about what the causation was here or what the specific problem might be. And also, characteristic for President Trump, what's so interesting about this is that, I mean, there's an element actually of truth and the complaint about the way these statistical agencies are functioning and the quality of the data. And there's an element of basic trolling here with the way that President Trump talks about this in a manner that seems calculated to incite his political opponents to adopt foolish positions themselves. And then there's also classic Trump thrashing to no good purpose and sort of flailing around and you know, sort of discrediting himself. So, you know, in terms of the element where he has a point, we've known for a long time, going back decades, that there are a lot of problems with the way the government collects data. So, John, you mentioned the survey problem. One issue is that it's not like there is a central database in the economy of job creation. A lot of what we think we know about the U.S. economy is based on surveys and various polls that these agencies conduct. So to collect information about job creation, the Bureau of Labor Statistics will send out a survey to several hundred or several thousand companies of different sizes in a variety of industries across the country in different regions. And based on the responses to those surveys, they've developed a model that will help them extrapolate that into what they think is an accurate picture of the broader economy. And there are a lot of things that can go wrong and that do go wrong in this process. First off, the response rates to the surveys have plummeted over the years, particularly the initial response rate. And so one of the reasons that you keep getting these revisions over subsequent months is that when the BLS sends out the survey asking companies, what was your hiring in June? The results will trickle in for a few months. And so the BLS itself won't have a complete picture when it publishes the first round of numbers. And then they also have to develop economic models that allow them to plug in the survey responses that they have received and then multiply that out to a plausible estimate for the broader economy. And in order to do that, you have to have assumptions about which industries are thriving and which industries are seeing the strongest job creation at the moment, which regions, so that you know how to properly weight the survey results that you have received. And there is ample room for error in that process as well. So it can certainly be the case that there are problems with the way that the BLS collects and publishes data, some of which are not the BLS's fault. You know, they aren't directly responsible for poor survey response rates. They might be a bit more responsible if it turns out that their economic models are wrong when they try to extrapolate out these data. That can all be true. Now, it doesn't follow that it's wrong because there is a political plot to embarrass Republicans with bad jobs data whenever a Republican administration is in office. But I think that there are serious issues with the way that we collect government data about the economy. And as a result of that, we have to think carefully about how we interpret and use those data.
We learned that Mr. Antony has suggested halting the agency's monthly jobs report, arguing, says Mr. Antony, that the data is flawed, which is what you've just indicated, Joe. The data is flawed. This seems to be an agreed-upon point. Can that be fixed, or are we just going to sail blind?
Well, there's always been this question about what you can do about this, and it's worth pointing out that some ways that these data get used, the users of the data have actually changed their approach over time to account for these errors. So, for example, when it sets interest rate policy, the Federal Reserve thinks a lot about the labor market and the condition of the labor market, but they have said over time that they pay less attention to the monthly BLS data that are controversial here, and they pay more attention to various data sets that are published on a quarterly basis because the Federal Reserve economists think that those might give them a somewhat more accurate picture of what's happening in the economy when they set monetary policy. So there is a certain amount of buyer beware that goes into this. Now, there are also questions about whether you can improve the data. Are there ways that the BLS could do a better job of coaxing more companies into responding in a timely manner? There's some discussion about that. I think that, you know, it can cut both ways. It's sort of hard to know what you can do if you're in a situation where the BLS doesn't have the power to fine companies that don't respond, and they shouldn't have that authority. So I think that part of the solution here might be more creative thinking. Part of the solution might be more thoughtful modeling in terms of what the BLS does with the data, the raw data it collects before it publishes its numbers to voters and agencies and businesses. But I also think that, you know, part of the story is those of us in the media or government agencies or the business world who use these data, I think sometimes we can become a bit complacent, assuming that because the government has published them, they must be high quality data. They are high effort data. I think that the government agencies try very, very hard to publish accurate numbers to the best of their ability. But this episode is also a reminder that those of us who use these numbers to reach conclusions about what's happening in the economy just need to tread more carefully about the way we interpret these figures.
One more detail. As I understand it, Mr. Antony believes that the numbers are flawed to the upside. They overstate employment. That might explain why there had to be such a dramatic revision downward, because then they had better numbers as the time went on. They're rushing and have to adjust, and that's part of the process. Is that useful, Joe?
Well, I mean, I think the problem here is that there are so many different ways that you can define useful. So, I mean, it is kind of useful to have the monthly data published as a rough snapshot of what's going on in the economy. And even if you don't believe the actual headline number, because the methodology is the same from month to month, you can have some confidence in the direction of travel. You know, whether the jobs number has gone up or down might tell you more than what the number actually is at an absolute level. But again, I think that ultimately there's no way around the fact that the U.S. economy is incredibly complex. I mean, if you think of the different regional variations that we have, the different economic policies in the 50 states and even down to the city or county level in America, the geographic diversity, the different industries in different places, the different kinds of companies that we have from the sole proprietorship up to, you know, some of the world's largest companies. And the fact that we are the world's largest economy overall, it is incredibly difficult to collect any kind of snapshot of something as complicated as the U.S. economy. And I think that in general, we all just need to be cognizant of that.
Joseph Sternberg, member of the editorial board of the Wall Street Journal. He's in London. He writes political economics. We're going to stay in Britain because there's a very famous visitor there right now with his family, the vice president in Oxfordshire, Cotswolds, enjoying himself.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
Tired of spills and stains on your sofa? WashableSofas.com has your back. Featuring the Anabe Collection, the only designer sofa that's machine washable inside and out, where designer quality meets budget-friendly prices. That's right, sofas start at just $699. Enjoy a no-risk experience with pet-friendly, stain-resistant, and changeable slip covers made with performance fabrics. Experience cloud-like comfort with high-resilience foam that's hypoallergenic and never needs fluffing. The sturdy steel frame ensures longevity, and the modular pieces can be rearranged anytime. Check out WashableSofas.com and get up to 60% off your Anabe sofa, backed by a 30-day satisfaction guarantee. If you're not absolutely in love, send it back for a full refund. No return shipping or restocking fees. Every penny back. Upgrade now at WashableSofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.